Hello and welcome to another interview on GivingCirclesHelp.com, where we're compiling information and interviews from people around the country who are running Giving Circles so that we can learn from each other and continuously improve our ability to make an impact with our giving. Today I'm speaking with Susie Berenson. She is a founding member and current board member of Many Hands Inc. It's a giving circle located in Maryland. Welcome, Susie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me.
Would you start with giving us an overview of your giving circle?
Sure. Many Hands was founded in 2003 in Bethesda, Maryland, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. And our concept is very simple. We raise $100,000 in $1,000 increments from individual donors. And we spent some time researching local nonprofits that focus on the needs of women and children, do research, and then award the $100,000 grant to the nonprofit whose mission we think is most aligned with the Many Hands goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then we give away the money, and then we operate on an every other year cycle. And so then every other year we raise the money again, do our research, and give away the $100,000 grant. And in each giving cycle, we've been really fortunate in that we've raised in excess of $100,000. So after the $100,000 grant, we go with two smaller grants, dividing up equally what the additional money has been.
So when you say you raise the money and then you give away the money, so let's see, this year in 2012, was this a year that you were raising money or giving away money?
We are, well, it's both. We're currently in the process of raising the money. And how we do that is really straightforward. We just ask. We've compiled a list of potential donors, and we solicit them directly through the mail and through email. And the idea is that each woman we solicit would ideally give $1,000. And that $1,000 donation goes to Many Hands. We are ourselves a 501c3, a nonprofit. And then the donor can, if she chooses, come on board and work on one of our three committees. We have a committee that focuses in the area of housing, one that focuses in the area of health, and one that focuses in the area of education. So we've got three active committees, and a $1,000 donation allows the woman to come on board, work on committees, go out, research, and vet potential grant recipients. And at the end of that process, which is about 4 or 5 months, each committee comes forward with their first choice organization of whom they'd like to receive the grant. We then convene all of our donors. Every woman who's given $1,000, whether she's worked on a committee or not, meets together, and these two organizations, again, one from health, one from housing, one from education, come together and make a presentation to our entire group of donors. They describe their organization, what they do, what they hope to achieve, and equally importantly, how they would use a $100,000 grant.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a vote, and the winning organization gets the $100,000 grant, and then the other two presenting organizations will divide the excess money. Last cycle, we raised $130,000, so we gave away a $100,000 grant and two $15,000 grants.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole cycle, from starting to raise the money in September, ends in May when we award our grants. And then we take a year off, and then we start up again in September.
So what's important about taking a year off?
Well, we discussed that. Actually, the very first year we did this, in 2004, we did not take a year off.
Mm-hmm.
And so in essence, we give away the grant, we have summer off, and then we started raising money again.
Mm-hmm.
And after we did that, back to back, we realized that we were a little bit worried, not in donor fatigue, because the women were very generous and seemed really eager to support us again the following year, but in volunteer fatigue. The coming on a committee, we think, is among the most rewarding parts of joining Many Hands, but it takes a fair amount of time, and we wanted our most active members to not burn out, to feel like they had a breather in between the time they had given us all their time and labor and the time they were being asked again to come on board and help us vet potential grant recipients. So after a lot of discussion back and forth, we decided that going every other year allowed women to take a little bit of a break from working with us.
And they must look forward then to when you start up again.
That's certainly our hope. And we have women who say, gee, you know, I wish you would do it every year. I'd love to be involved every single year. And donors have, in fact, said, even if it's an off cycle, can we still give to many hands and have that money roll over? And, of course, we say, yes, please, we welcome donations any time of year. But we'd rather have our donors looking forward to working for us as opposed to feeling like, I feel like I just did this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we did it.
So your committee members are very involved, and it requires a lot of work.
Yeah, well, yeah, it does. If you go in as a full force committee member, we like to structure many hands so that donors can give as much or as little time as they'd like. As I said, some women give at their $1,000 and then don't do any committee work at all. They show up at the end meeting and cast their vote, and that is really welcome. We love women who don't have the time or the inclination to volunteer but still support us financially. And there are women who work on a committee but maybe can only make every other meeting or go on one site visit, and that's fine too. And then there are women who really just jump in with both feet,
mm-hmm.
and are at every meeting and go on as many site visits as they can. So the level of commitment really is based on what the woman can and wants to give to many hands, and we welcome all levels.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the design of how we structured our giving circle.
And I'm curious to hear that you're soliciting donations through mail. Is that how did you solicit your donations again?
Yep, our very first and subsequent solicitations all start with a mailing. We have a brochure that we print up, and of course a cover letter and a reply card, and we can now accept donations online. We have a website. And so we really wanted our donation process to be low cost, because virtually 100% of the money we raise goes to our organizations. So we didn't want to do any fancy fundraisers. We didn't want to spend any money on food or drink or entertainment. We really just wanted to ask people, hey, is this something you're interested in? So we start with a mailing, and then and in that mailing, the women can donate right away, or the mailing also indicates that we're having a meeting to come learn more about Many Hands, and would you like to come hear more about us? And women then come, and we give presentations of who we are and what we do and the different ways you can be involved, and then we follow up with email solicitations to the women who've expressed interest. And we've been very fortunate in that we started our fundraising efforts in September, and by December we've always met our $100,000 goal. And then, you know, we continue to push to try and go above and beyond, because obviously the more we raise, the more we can then give away.
Mm-hmm. And how are you choosing who to mail to?
Well, it's really, we have a very active board, and Many Hands, of course, is completely inclusive. We welcome anybody who wants to participate with us. But we start simply with people we know, and then we ask people we know, hey, excuse me, this is what we're doing. Do you know anybody who might be interested? And we just try and create our own mailing list based on active members of our community, people we've met through the years, recommendations from people who we may not know. We advertise in some local newspapers about our kickoff meeting, so anyone who come who read about us. It's really, and now since we're going on our fifth round, it's become a word of mouth thing.
So, and do you find that the people who joined in the last cycle are on board for the most recent one?
Yeah, that's a great question. We do have a really nice, strong record of women becoming involved with Many Hands year after year. Certainly every year there are women who don't re-up for a whole host of reasons. Most commonly, they've moved out of the area, and since we're locally focused, it's understandably of less interest, or maybe their financial circumstances have changed. They now have kids in college, or a spouse has decided to stay home and work, and so that $1,000 donation is not in their budget for that year. In a really nice twist, a lot of times women become really active with the organizations that they're shepherding through the process.
Mm.
And then they say, hey, look, we love Many Hands, but I'm now volunteering full, you know, with this other organization, and I'm going to give my $1,000 directly to them this year.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some common reasons why women may not re-up again, but we've got a very strong percentage of women who do choose to participate year after year.
And do you ask for that $1,000 in like one check? Do you give people options for breaking it up? Is there anything like that?
Well, we offer it in one check, and that's always how it's come. Some women have come forward and said, gee, we really like to be involved, but that $1,000 is just outside our budget. And what we've done there is allowed them to pair up. So we have a handful of women who had found a partner that you give a $500 gift, making it a $1,000 donation. And then between the two of them, they have one vote.
Okay.
And they may elect who wants to come vote, or they may both come and talk amongst themselves. We actually have one group of four who come, and they've each given $250 and then kind of voted for a captain, and that person has decided who they're going to vote for at the end of the process. So we really want to be as inclusive as possible and have as many people participate as possible. But the $1,000 idea was we wanted there to be an incentive for women to stretch and give us what really is a lot of money to the organization. And that's how we ended up with $1,000 equals one vote.
And how many, so last time you raised about $130,000.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So does that translate then to about like 100 members, or do you think of them as members or donors?
That's a good question. I've never actually counted it up, but I would say for the 130,000, this is just a guess, I'm guessing we had about 110 different donors.
Okay.
Who did that? Maybe 115. I mean, the vast majority give the 1,000.
Okay. Okay.
And some women actually have given more. Last year at our meeting, a $1,000 donor came, heard the three presentations, and she said, you know what, I just can't decide. And at that meeting, she wrote a check for an additional $2,000 because she knew, in essence, each organization would get $1,000 of the money.
Right.
And there have been some people who've had kind of matching situations with where they work, or have said, I understand I only get one vote, but I just love this organization so much, I'd like to write a check for a little more. Maybe it'll help cover some of your overhead. But 95% of our donors are $1,000.
Okay. So I was looking through the application that you had on your website, and I can see that it is very simple. You're not asking from a lot from them. And so my question is, do you find that people will apply for this 100,000 grant? Are they mostly kind of nominated by the members?
Well, what we do is some people email me and say, I've heard about your organization. Would I qualify for a potential grant? And then we look at the parameters and see if they fit. And then if the answer is yes, we, of course, look good. But in general, how we go out and find our organizations is word of mouth, or we go out and do research. There are a ton of really helpful websites out there for any region of the country describing nonprofits and the good work that they're doing in the community. There are also community foundations that help private donors who want to be more philanthropic. It helps guide their investment, and those communications help us target organizations. There's an incredible resource in our area called the Catalog for Philanthropy that every year sets out a catalog with 75 new noteworthy nonprofits, and we use the catalog. So we do our own research, and then we as the board, when we set our committees up, help guide the committees in what organizations they may want to look at. So last year on my committee, which was housing, we started with a list of 30 housing organizations, and then we do phone interviews for those organizations and see if we want to set up a site visit. And then we have a couple of site visits as we narrow down those. But we decided early on that we wanted to make this process thorough unobtrusive for these nonprofits. Many of the nonprofits we're looking at don't have full-time fundraisers or grant writers, and we decided to spend more of their energy on our site visits so we could get out there and really see what they were doing, and less of their energy on filling out paperwork and filling out grant proposals. So that was a really conscious decision on our part.
So really the site visit for you is kind of the centerpiece around which you're basing your decisions.
Absolutely. And we do, then once we start to narrow down to two or three organizations within any committee, then we ask for 2 years of their past financial statements, and we have them viewed as well. before we put an organization through to our members for a full vote. So, yeah, the site visits more than anything else, I think, help determine who's going to get to that final round. But we also do a really thorough financial vetting process to make sure that we feel comfortable in the financial stability.
What are you looking for in your site visit?
Well, that's a great question. After we've decided that the group fits our parameters, which very simply put would be they have to have annual revenue between $500,000 and $5 million, they have to have been around 5 years, they have to focus in our, they have to be local. When we get out on the site visit, we really want to see if, one, the overall feel of the place. Does it seem to be doing what it says its charter is doing? Is the community that it's serving, do they seem to be responding well to these services? How are they able to measure the outcomes of whatever it is that they're trying to achieve? We want to look at who's running the organization and how long have they been with the organization? How persuasive are they and able to articulate what the mission of the organization is? But we also want to make sure, and we've seen this a lot, of nonprofits are founded and run by very, very charismatic, fabulous leaders. But we want to make sure that if that leader were to leave for whatever reason, does the organization have the infrastructure to continue on?
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to be guarded. Yes, it's important to have a very visionary director or founder, but what happens if that founder leaves?
Mm-hmm. That's a great point to look for. I'm not sure that I would have realized that without some experience.
Yes, exactly. And we learned that sort of as we went through. We've never been burned by that, but as we started to look at organizations, maybe organizations who didn't make it to the final round, and then we'd find out later that the founding director left for whatever good reason, and then the organization really began to flounder.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would definitely suggest that people look for what we call kind of a cult of personality organization that still can be doing fantastic work, but you just want to make sure it can sustain itself if that person leaves.
Mm-hmm. So $100,000 is a very large grant. Now, are you looking at organizations of a particular size that are capable of handling and using a $100,000 grant without wondering, what are we going to do with all this money? Do you have any...
Yes, absolutely. That is a great question. We found it many hands. We spent a lot of time deciding, do we want to give away such a large chunk of money, or maybe we would like to divide it into 10 smaller $10,000 grants, or $50,000 grants. And we decided for organizations of a certain size, it was really hard for them to get a large unrestricted grant. And so what we've done to try and guard against an organization being swamped by our grant is to make sure that they, as I said earlier, have been in existence for at least 5 years, so they've got some infrastructure in place, and that they have at least $500,000 of annual revenue each year.
Mm.
We also want to be on the spectrum that our grant really has impact on an organization, and that's really one of many hands' missions, is to provide money and really bring an organization to another level. And so we capped the organization at $5 million. In general, for whatever reason, it's worked out that most of the organizations we look at hover around the $1 million range, up to two. We've gone as low as $700,000 or $800,000. But, yeah, for sure, we want to make sure that the group is set up to handle that kind of money. Because what can seem like a blessing can end up really being a curse for a group if they don't know how to manage it well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So your Giving Circle was started in 2003, which means you're about at the 8-year mark now.
Yep, that's exactly right.
What have you learned over those 8 years? Have you made any changes, or have you...
Well, every year in our off year, we as a board meet throughout that off-giving cycle to help refine our process, what isn't working as well. One thing that we have found in some ways specific to our organization is we've got these three different committees, health, housing, and education. And how do we, at the end of the day, make sure that our voters have as similar information about each organization if possible. So to the extent we can make sure they're comparing apples to apples and not apples to oranges.
Mm-hmm.
And we've worked hard in refining how the presentations are made, what kind of information we solicit from those organizations to try and make it, you know, like versus like. So that's one thing that we continually try and refine. I've also learned on a personal level that there's really no one right answer at all in terms of what is the best way an organization can use our money. One person might feel really strongly, look, it needs to go to a capital expense. I want this money to go for computers or a bus or to fund a library. I want to be able to touch and feel where my money has gone. And other people say, look, that stuff gets dated really quickly. And I want it to go into either staffing or operational expenses. And really, at the end of the day, there's no one right answer to that. We're a democracy, one person, one vote. And we've shifted back and forth in how our donations have gone, whether they've gone, people can feel in touch, or whether they've gone for, you know, a human resources type organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is your biggest challenge or challenges running this Giving Circle?
Every year I keep my fingers crossed when we solicit money. The past two cycles have not been great times in the American economy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I can say it's the biggest challenge. Met our goal relatively easily. You know, every year or every time we do it, it's always a challenge to make sure that we meet that goal. Another thing that I would say is an ongoing challenge is to make sure that we give away that money to an organization and spend it wisely. And again, we've never had a problem with that at all. But when you're talking about that kind of money, and I feel great, and all of the board members do feel great responsibility to our donors who've really trusted many hands with their $1,000. And we end up giving it to an organization that's worthy and stable and sound and is going to move forward with this money and use it wisely. And so I think for any giving circle, that's going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Susie, is there anything that I didn't ask you about your giving circle that you'd like to share with us now?
Well, one question I get asked a fair amount is, it's important for us to get our own nonprofit status. So we, when we spent that year founding Many Hands, before we asked for any money, we decided that we wanted to become our own 501c3, which gives us nonprofit status, which means, in essence, when someone donates their money to us, we are the nonprofit, and we are the ones who give them the tax benefit of donating to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot, at least where I live, that was an awful lot of red tape. I was very glad we had a couple of lawyers on the board to help us navigate that whole application process. And my short answer to that really is it depends on how much money I think you're planning on raising and handling at any given time. It's certainly, I think, the amount of money we're raising and the increments we're raising, it's really important for your organization's credibility to help donors feel comfortable giving to you. It's like a good housekeeping stamp of approval that you're a legitimate organization. As well as being able to provide the tax write-off for people who are giving you a fair amount of money. I've heard of giving circles that have potlucks and people bring $25 and then they get $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 to give back to their community. Now there, I don't think it's necessary to go through all the red tape, the time and the expense of getting your nonprofit. It really depends on the scope of what you're trying to do, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Do you think, though, that it's the total dollar amount that you're giving away, or is it the individual amount that each person is giving that starts to trigger that worthwhile nonprofit status?
Well, they're both interrelated. I mean, if you're raising in $50 increments, it's going to take a lot of donations to get to a total where I think you'd have to worry a little bit about having your own 501c3. So I think it probably starts with what the individual donations are. Now, if you're doing a web-based giving circle asking for $50, I guess I'd pretty quickly get up into the higher figures, and I'd want to consider it. So it's definitely interrelated. But I think it probably starts with the amount people are entrusting with you, because first and foremost, you want to be able to allow them to have their tax break. And second, as I said, it's one thing to give somebody $20 or $30 and hope they spend it wisely. It's another thing if you're asking for a couple hundred. Actually, I've heard of giving circles that ask for $5,000 a year or more. Then I think you really want it.
Now, you started off right away asking for $1,000, and your vision was 100 women, $1,000 is a $100,000 grant, right? Do you think that it's good to start off with a larger amount, or to start, is it more challenging to start bigger like that, or to start small and increase the amount that you're asking from people?
Well, that's a good question. I've never thought that way. I guess my first response would be it's important to know who your donor base is. And so we felt that there were enough women in our community who would have the resources and the desire to do $1,000. If I were living in a different part of the country or thought our donor base was going to be different, for whatever reason, then maybe we would have questioned that and started lower. I think the most important thing is to be successful in whatever your goals are. I guess in thinking it through, a downside of asking for a smaller amount and then raise, people might say, hey, wait, last time you only asked me for $100, now you're asking me for $500. You know, why is that?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could get potentially a little pushback there. So I would just really, really try and read your donor pool and see what you think the potential is in that community. And also, quite frankly, how much money you want to be responsible for. You may have a community where you could ask for a lot of money, but you may not feel in a position to want to be responsible for that much money the first time around. So I guess that's another consideration.
Yeah, great advice. Well, Susie, I want to thank you so much for sharing all of your thoughts and advice with us. There's just great information in this interview, so thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and thank you for doing this, because truly, if for someone who wants to get involved in their community and doesn't quite know how, I think forming a giving circle is just a great way to do it. And at whatever level you choose to do it, it's an incredible way to both help your community, but also meet new people you haven't met before, understand what the need is in your community, getting more involved with nonprofits in your community you may not have even heard of before. And I just can't say enough about what Giving Circles have done for me personally, but I also think for the other board members who've been really involved in our donors. It's a really worthwhile venture.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, that coming together in a group and being involved with your donation like this and giving away large sums of money, it makes donating a much more fulfilling experience. It's not just like duty that we're discharging because we have to. For me, it's a joy.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, this is one of the reasons we started it, is my husband and I felt that we were giving away a little money here and a little money there, and it wasn't really having an impact. And quite frankly, we weren't really invested or involved with the organizations we were donating. And this really helps solve a lot of those frustrations I think many, many donors feel.
I agree. Well, again, Susie, thank you so much for your advice today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.